Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Tell us some of the bases upon which they're doing the attacks against the population, Alan.
Well, if you go back to the early economists that we know of that worked for the British government, back to Thomas Malthus in the 1700s, he was also the head of the British East India Company, which all the shareholders were members of royalty and the aristocracy, their relatives. He talked about how to depopulate excess populations when their purpose was over. And they had international meetings in the 1700s about that very problem between them and their sister company, the Dutch East India Company, both owned by the royal families. And he suggested even putting housing in unhealthy areas near swamps, etc., crowd them together, and then disease will spread much easier through them, especially the young and elderly would be the first to go. So these were things were talked about quite practically from their point of view. They're very pragmatic, as they see themselves, and people are there to serve them. They see, from the top, they see the average person at the bottom is a different species. We have to understand that. Darwin helped to champion their cause by introducing a valification of the class system. And, of course, under Darwin's theory of social Darwinism, the elite deserved to be at the top because they had the survival instincts and the cunning and all the abilities necessary to be where they are, which left everyone down below as basically belonging to the junk gene group. You wouldn't evolve any further. So your use basically was to feed the elite. And when they had no more purpose for you and you couldn't produce for them, then you should simply be culled off like any other animal. This was talked about in the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s, up to the present day. And it still is talked about at the top of the United Nations. We should take this very, very seriously. These guys mean what they say. They don't believe in an excess population in a post-industrial society, and they have been depopulating by introducing all of these diseases which come out of laboratories. If you don't believe me, read some of the stuff put out in Canada by the Toronto Star reporter. It's called Deadly Allies. Canada leads the world in bacterial and viral warfare and has since 1942.
Your child
we are being bioengineered, and as we talked about earlier, they're going to create two different species on the planet.
Exactly.
The Daily Mail on the 27th of October published an article by one of the top scientists in England on this separating or splitting into two separate species.
Exactly.
The active, intelligent, ruling elite, and all the mutants down below on the modified hood, etc. So they're publishing this stuff, and this goes all the way back again to Thomas Malthus, the top economist and advisor to the British crown and royalty in the 1700s, that talked about ways to even toxify homes and where to put the homes that would kill off the people faster. It's all the same agenda. And people should really go into the books by Thomas Malthus, who was the first one to openly come out on behalf of his own elite class. And he wrote a book called The Essay on the Principle of Population. And that's still a standard amongst the elite themselves today. They have all these fake figures that they always use in graphs to show you how the world's going to be so overpopulated in 10, 20 years. We're going to be standing on top of each other. And Malthus from the 1700s lied and lied and lied and showed all these fake graphs. But they still use the principles of his doctrine today. And they have world meetings every year on commemoration of him by department from the United Nations on population control. The big players in this system talked about, and again bewailed the fact, that they were losing traditional methods of culling the population. Going back as far as Thomas Malthus, who was a big top economist for the British East India Company, an advisor to royalty, and they said we need something to bring back plagues like the Black Death and so on to cull the population, and we must get ways to make the public's minds lethargic was the term. Now they were already using that with slaves in their various plantations by testing special diets on the slaves. They wanted them fit enough to do their work but not too strong that they could walk off from that plantation. but and not too bright, and not enough energy to think too much. So they've used food down through centuries for this very purpose.
How about overpopulation? The whole notion that the world cannot sustain the people that exist on it now, let alone in the future.
Again, that all goes back. This is not new again, but it was well documented. The technique was documented by Malthus in the 1700s. He was an economist for the British Crown and for the British East India Company. And he was the first one to fudge this brand new phenomenon called statistics. They say there are lies, damn lies, and then there are statistics. It's hard to argue, you see. It's hard to argue when they say statistics. And Malthus really fudged. He made graphs that would predict that within 100 years, in the 1800s, they'd be walking all over each other on the planet, all the commoners, and might overthrow the elite. And so he came down with all these ways and means to eliminate a vast quantity of those that were undesirable, and even suggested building public housing on swamplands, so they'll get infected and their children will be prone to disease and all the rest of it because of the...
Oh, just wipe them out with a plague or two.
Yes. And, well, that's exactly, again, what Bertrand Russell talked about. He says, we're in a bind. If we help the people, they'll live longer, and more of the wrong people will breed. This is what we're up against here. These are real psychopaths. They really have an agenda.
So, what numbers have you heard about their population reduction? Is there... is it something like the Georgia Guidestones, or?
Oh no, long before that. I got old British books. I was so interested in this propaganda we were given because about too many people that started to come out about the 70s. They started to get the drum beats going then, and I got a hold of old books on the very same topic written around the 1920s, where many authors were pointing out the true statistics, because the con game of overpopulation was getting put out there by the days of Malthus. And Thomas Malthus was an East Indian economist for East India Company, for the British Crown again, who owned that company. And Malthus came out with the necessity of population reduction, and again the same thing, the fear of the commoners breeding too quickly and too many of them, they would outbreed the elite. And so he devised ways of reducing the population, restricting diets of certain things, changing the diets, putting housing up in swampland so they'll die off quicker. All of this kind of stuff was all advocated, and should read he put a book out on it, you know. People should get a hold of that book and read it. That's how far back this whole thing goes. But he also brought out graphs, and it's like... it's like Theo Roosevelt said. He says, there are lies, there are damned lies, and then there are statistics. If you call something a statistic, it sounds much more scientific and we swallow it. Well, Malthus came out with all these statistics and graphs to show how the population, by the year about 1900, or even before that, would all be walking over each other according to his own data. And as they've been using lies from the very beginning, to try and prove this data of overpopulation. What it is in history, if you look at the history of elite rulers and dynasties, they always turn around and try to kill off certain portions of their population because they become paranoid. They know what they're up to will get caught on to eventually, and they become paranoid and they want to cull the population to a manageable level. It's just the same old thing again. We find, for instance, that in the 1700s and 1800s, top economists that were employed by these big royal type or royal chartered organizations, top economists like Malthus came forward and put out his theory on basically depopulation, the need for drastic depopulation of the public. And he elaborated and said that we will end this industrial era, it won't go on forever, and we'll have all these excess useless eaters, basically. And he devised ways of trying to cull off the population, even down to putting them into the poorhouses, and they'd have people on the floor in the poorhouses. They measured the distance between them to see how far. They knew how far, for instance, that lice would crawl from one person to the next and carry typhus and various other diseases. This was a science that was already understood. So this is a step beyond family planning that they brought forward too with Margaret Sanger. The next step is global planning, and now we're seeing it in mainstream media. Now, I've read lots of articles recently where they're calling for reducing the population by mandatory one child per family policies, etc., in the Western world.
Wow. Yeah. Now, do any of these actions, though they may seem to fit in this whole new world order, but are some of them necessary in some way, shape, or form, or are they just absolutely unacceptable?
They're not. Since the days of Malthus, Thomas Malthus, and he came up with the Malthusian doctrine of economics and population management on behalf of the British Empire, or the British dominant minority, as Huxley would call them, and he used fake graphs and charts from the beginning to try and terrify his own crowds into forcing more wars on the public to bring down the population as they built the empire. So there's always a purpose as they kill you off. You can always build with an empire for them. And he said that the poor should be housed in the most unhealthy regions where it's damp and etc. and poor conditions so that they could die off faster. they actually work it all out to do with mathematics and economic necessity. And so they have decided that you're not simply born with the right to exist. No, you can only be born in their system if you have a purpose to serve the world state. Hence you're seeing coming out on cue in Britain, Canada, the US, and other countries, mandatory servitude, volunteerism. That's not a coincidence.
So is
because
this
once it's on the books, they can expand that to a year, then 2 years, etc. That's what it's all about. That's in the charter of the Royal Institute for International Affairs and the CFR, the bringing in of a world of service to the world state. And that's what kings and queens were about down through the ages. They had ongoing wars which are tremendously profitable, and it also serves the purpose of depopulation. Something going back to the days of ancient Greece. Now, most of the Grecian islands in the Aegean Sea were just that. They were islands. They could only have so much of a population. And so the leaders of those different islands had agreements that every so often they'd have wars. They'd supply the loans for those wars. They'd tax the people for the wars, and they would kill off so many of the people. They'd also have they'd own the munitions. At that time, it was all spears and breastplates and all this kind of stuff. And nothing much has changed. If we jump forward in time to the 1800s, when Mr. Malthus was the top economist for the British East India Company and the British Crown, really the European Crown, because it's all linked together, he came out with his writings on population. People should read this because he was an economist. And economists factor in future projected populations, debt, how much is owed by nations, how many they'll need to pay off that debt on estimates and all these projections, how many people would be surplus and would eat into that debt. And looking at the poor, who were always a problem for them, they found ways of getting rid of them. And Malthus said that they should put the poor in public housing. Housing, of course, would be poorly built and crammed together and put them in marshy areas where they'd have diseases break out. And he called it positive population checks. That's what he called them. Those were the terms he used as a top economist for the British Crown and the East India Company. Everyone in the East India Company was a member of royalty or a cousin of royalty. And even Elihu Yale, that was one of the founding members, founded Yale University, was a cousin as well. So they set up their plans long in advance, even for the Americas, but they needed to bring populations down occasionally when it didn't fit into the economic system. Now, the poor laws really were not. It's like everything in Davos speak. We've got to understand how these guys at the top work. It wasn't to help the poor. It was to start to eliminate the poor. They created workhouses. So when you became sick or whatever, or your husband died, or your wife died, or whatever it was, or you lost your job, they put you in the poor house. And people like Thomas Malthus, who was a eugenicist and he was an economist for the British government, said that they could maybe put them in the poor house, work them very hard, give them a specific, very small diet, restricted diet, and also put them very close to each other, because with lice carrying disease back and forth, if they're on the floor, about 2 feet was good, because they come down with different kinds of diseases. He also advocated that they put these poor houses in swampy areas to make them as unhealthy as possible. So it was a form of killing off the useless eaters, basically.
Right. The vagrants or beggars, sometimes they term these people sturdy rogues. The group was also termed the idle poor. Is that... Man,
that's right.
I tell you.
The term they used in Britain was unfortunates.
Unfortunate,
unfortunates.
Okay.
And really, they meant useless eaters amongst themselves. Yeah. An awful, awful long time ago, certain elite in India had come up with ideas on how to dumb people down, and it tied in with their religion, and the peasantry ended up being rather emaciated and not too swift in certain matters, but they could get their jobs done and didn't complain a lot. And if you read the writings of Malthus on his population, his paper on population, and he wrote that for the British East India Company, for their plantations, and for the Crown of England. He wanted to depopulate, but he also talked as well about how to make the people dumb and stupid and compliant by altering their diet into a mainly vegetarian diet, and then restricting even that diet with not an abundance of choices, but a limitation of choices. And that wasn't a new idea, because, you see, the ancient Egyptians had done that with their slaves, too. They tried different diets on the slaves to make them healthy enough to work, but something that wouldn't make them too swift in the old brain box side of things.
Right.
And also not too energetic, that after the day's work they might want to walk off and escape. You're always too weak by the end of the day. So there's nothing new in this at all, except that the food's now been modified, the GMO food, and it's been modified to affect you physically and mentally. There's no doubt whatsoever about that.
Right, so I take it you're not a vegetarian.
No. Let's see, this article here is about this very topic of depopulation as it comes out into the open. November 19th, 2008 from the BBC by Brendan O'Neill. First posted November 14th, 2008. In the middle of all the hoo-ha over Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand's childish phone calls and a late-night radio show, you may have missed a far more scandalous utterance that was made on BBC Radio. On 5th of November, the upmarket Night Waves on BBC Radio 3 aired a discussion about overpopulation between Dr. Susan Blackmore, a neuroscientist, and eugenicist, I've read articles on her before, and Professor John Gray of the London School of Economics. They're all working together, of course. Dr. Blackmore said the fundamental problem facing the planet today is that there are too many people. Professor Gray agreed, and Dr. Blackmore declared, for the planet's sake, I hope we have bird flu or some other thing that will reduce the population, because otherwise we are doomed. I guess she knows she's not going to get it. The bird flu, that is. So it's official at the BEEB, that's the BBC. It is acceptable to make crude jokes about having sex with someone's granddaughter, but it's perfectly okay to wish death upon large swaths of mankind. Make a rude call to Andrew Sachs, answer phone, and you'll be accused of dragging the BBC's good name through the dirt. Spout misanthropic nonsense about the need for us speedily contagious disease to come and wipe out humanity and mankind, and nobody will bat an eyelid. Well, you see, they're all recruited from Eton. You see, that's been standard with the BBC, the government's television station, the main propaganda arm of the British establishment. At the Beaver, it is perfectly okay to wish death upon large swaths of mankind. Disparity between the public reaction to Brandgate Wild and the public reaction to what I think we should call bird flu gate, non-existent, reveals a great extent or deal about the warped morality of the cultural elites. The reason why Dr. Blackmore's remark received no coverage or complaints is because the herbal tea-drinking literati that listens to Radio 3 discussion programs will secretly share her prejudices about overpopulation. Malthusianism, the one-eyed belief that all of the Earth's problems are caused by overbreeding, is making a comeback in polite circles. Following the discrediting of eugenics during the Second World War, as they slaughtered all the inferior types, as they called it, through racial hygiene, Malthusians had been rather shamefaced about their beliefs. They continually invented new PC terms with which they might address up their angst about too many people. In Africa, in particular, measures to tackle overpopulation were promoted in the deceitful language of choice and autonomy. And this article continues here. Part two. By charities, this is what they call it, keen to avoid being accused of pursuing that far uglier sounding goal, population control. You see, the foundations are all in there with their birth control and abortion clinics. And so are all the governments of the world, the Western world. Just more recently, however, Malthusians have become more strident. The poisonous notion that the speedily breeding masses are pushing the planet to breaking point has become a casual dinner party prejudice. Earlier this year, Prince Philip gave a TV interview in which he offered a pat explanation for the food price crisis. Too many people, he says, on the other side of the political spectrum, a Republican columnist for The Independent fretted about the swelling billions, that's people in the third world, who are pushing our planet to extinction. Professor Gray has referred to humanity as a plague. The novelist Lionel Shriver recognizes that this is a racially, religiously, and ethnically sticky issue, but says the threat of overpopulation is back and here to stay. Dr. Blackmore was taking these increasingly common prejudices to their logical conclusion when she wished that bird flu would come and kill some of us off, the swelling billions, preferably, rather than Radio 3 aficionados. She follows in the tradition of Earth First, the eco group which in the early 1990s said that just as the plague contributed to the demise of feudalism, AIDS has the potential to end industrialism. So this is what they're all prattling on about, you see, in the upper class circles. And they have been for my whole life long. In fact, I've met some of them who've come out with it. And you would not believe the organizations that have been working busily and quietly to achieve this end. I know one in particular, one woman, who, although classified as a teacher, comes from a very old, well-established family. And she's given special time off to go globetrotting on behalf of the UN. And she'd been over in China for a few months. And when she came back, and because of the topics I talk about, she forgot who I was, that I wasn't one of her club. And she was talking about how great it was in China, and she was over studying their population control techniques, because they were thinking of trying to advance it and teach it and get it into curriculum in Canadian schools. I says, well, what gives you the right to do that, Sheila? She says, well, somebody has to do it. I'll be back with more of this after this break. Hi, folks, I'm Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix, reading an article here, and I'll put the link up at the end too, and I know that the author has written for The Guardian and The New Statesman. And I'll continue with some more of it, in fact, because he mentions here, he says, more recently the Optimum Population Trust, which counts Prince Charles eco-advisor Jonathan Porritt amongst its directors, said that if we don't find a way to reduce human numbers, then it will be one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse that bumps us off. Enough if Ross and Brand's outbursts show that comedians have trouble censoring their inner adolescence, then these middle-class fantasies about human annihilation suggest the cultural elite cannot keep its misanthropy in check. It says here, the neo-Malthusians are as wrong as every population alarmist in history has ever been, like Thomas Malthus, who died in 1834, and his followers, today's bird flu dreamers, make the schoolboy error of treating population growth as the only variant and everything else. Food production, progress, human ingenuity as fixed entities. They are motivated by severe pessimism about humanity's ability to come up with solutions to its problems and by the base idea that disease is the only thing that can sort us out. As I say, we go much further than that. No, you find out they're very organized and they have a fixed belief system, and they truly do believe that the inferior types must, like the Brahmins say too, die off. They cannot be allowed to come into a new age. That's a fixed belief in Brahmanism. And these guys have a lot in common with it.
I want to say something about population. When I went to Africa a couple years ago, I noticed that the city that I was in was really super crowded. But as soon as I get out in the country, there was nothing. There was no people, hardly any people at all.
That's right.
It was just empty.
Yeah.
So population is a myth. Overpopulation is a myth.
It's an absolute myth, you know, and it's the same thing, too, from the days of Thomas Malthus and all these graphs and charts where people were supposed to be walking over each other in 100 years from the 1700s. And it never happened. They're still doing the same nonsense today. The population has been declining in the Western world since World War One. And they harp on and say there's too many people. They've flooded the countries with immigration, claiming there's not enough people being born in the European countries or the American countries. And they need people to come in order to pay off the debt. That's the excuse they're giving, by the way, for bringing all the immigration in. But the thing is, they must make every major city appear to be vastly overcrowded. And people brought up in the cities think the whole world is like that. They have no idea what's outside of it. They really have no idea. So you can create false impressions by bringing lots of immigrants into already overcrowded cities, not building new buildings, because they're not expanding the urban sprawl, as I like to call it. Therefore, there's more and more folk crammed in the same existing cities. This gives the impression of overcrowding. And they first used this, and they still use this, by the way, when you look at India. They always show you a street in Calcutta or Bombay, and
yeah,
you think, my God, how can they live like that? You don't realize there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of square miles in India of jungle and forest and tiny little villages and so on, very remote from each other. And all the people who like to live in the cities are stuck in the same couple of cities.
Yeah.
So it's all alteration of perception, you see.
I read somewhere that Africa's population is actually the least dense in the entire world, and it's actually declining.
And I'll tell you another thing, too. They're always on about, oh, my God, like Kissinger said, the threat to the world is overpopulation. And then they put all these acts in for giving them free abortions across the third world. It's mandatory.
Yeah.
Part of the reason you've seen famine across Africa has been because there's not enough people living in the areas to do the farming to sustain themselves. And when that isn't happening, too, the West is always in there fomenting little wars, keeping the wars going, so they're not farming when the wars are going on. And that's standard throughout Africa and the Middle East as well. The West and Russia were famous for doing both of those things, keeping the trouble going. And it's been well proven, as I say, that the reason in Africa is not overpopulation. In many, many areas, it's underpopulation.
Big players, big organizations run the world. And these organizations are above your governments and they're within your governments because they do have their so-called scientists placed on board with them, especially now. It's a fairly recent phenomenon to have all these scientists placed on panels within governments who then advise presidents and prime ministers supposedly what to do. They all know it's an inside joke because they're there to make sure the agenda, there's only one agenda, is carried forward. And you can find the agenda, again, going all the way back to very old authors who talked about depopulation and getting rid of the unfit and all of that kind of stuff in a world to come. And Thomas Malthus, of course, was one of the main characters shoved forth into history to start off the conversations amongst the wealthy about this and about the coming problems of shortages and sustainability and all the rest of it. This is where all this comes from.
And it's no coincidence that the big foundations today that have carried on through Rockefeller and other ones are promoting the exact same agendas. But they also give us cognitive dissonance, as they call it, because we are trained to believe that charitable foundations and people who want to help us are there to help us. And when you also read that the same people are involved in depopulation, we go into a sort of click mode. We can't compute the two. Is he here to help me or is he here to kill me? And literally we tend to go for the better judgment, the nicer judgment, I should say. It's actually the wrong judgment, but the nicer one, the one that doesn't upset us too much, because we've been trained to be sort of egocentric and we don't like to look at the bad things.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.